Hi, this is Jonathan Ball, and you're about to listen to the second part of a two-part episode. I do encourage you to go back and listen to the first part if you haven't already. What do you want? This is the core question, I think, that underlies all other questions that I get asked by writers about writing. And it behooves you to think a little bit through what do you want, and then to think and design a approach to writing that works for you based on getting you what you want. So take a look at the first part if you haven't already. Take a good listen. Move into the second part here. Think a lot about this topic. I really encourage you to think deeply about what it is that you want out of your writing life and to re-examine some of the assumptions that you might have made before you got into this writing life. Without further ado, let's get the second part of my answer to KC, a former student who has a lot of really great, really interesting questions. The great thing about that kind of peer group is you can do it. One, you can do it. Two, you can make it genre specific. So if you're writing in a fantasy, you can get other fantasy writers together and do it or whatever. It's a great way to kind of get to know other people and support one another and so on. Get some free revision, give some free revision. Now, I don't really do that anymore. What I have gotten to is I'm kind of at a point in my career where, one, I'm doing a bunch of different things. So sometimes I'm doing comics, sometimes I'm doing poetry, sometimes I'm working on prose, sometimes I'm writing a script for film or whatever. So what I've kind of done over time is I've kind of evolved my scenario where instead of there being one group of people that I kind of routinely get together with, and there's writers of all types in that group, I'm instead have smaller groups and smaller like mini groups of like a couple people I know in each of these fields, and we'll kind of get feedback. And then also I'll pay for feedback. So I will also like get, like if I finish comics, so recently I got, I was working on this comic called She-Wolf. Okay. I done a Kickstarter to make this comic, and one of the things I did was I paid for some consultation sessions with Kira Staros of Top Shelf Books. You know, he's a comic professional who's worked with Alan Moore. He has run a publishing company for a number of years. I got him to give me feedback on the script, and I really reworked things based on his feedback. I had also previously had written a prose version of the story, and I'd gotten my friend Adam, who's a editor and also a writer, well-versed in the field of horror, to read that, and he'd give me some feedback. I had, when I finished the draft and had the art in and everything, I ended up showing a version of Scott Snyder, who's best known probably for writing a Batman. And he was really, positive about it. He really liked the She-Wolf issue one. So he didn't really have a lot of notes on it, but theoretically he could have had notes, right? If he had given me notes on it, I would have taken them, right? A friend of mine, he had given some notes to my friend Lennon on his Laundryman book. So Lennon took, those edits, and I saw, I could see Lennon. I'm working in a studio here with him, right? So I could see Lennon, taking... Literally, Scott Snyder told him to do this, so then he did it, So at that point, the reason we've got some access to Scott Snyder there is that we're paying to be part of his Best Jacket Club. So we've got, these kind of, mini little sessions we sometimes will do with him. Again, I had paid Staros for some consultation. Adam's a friend of mine. Me and Adam have traded sort of, giving each other notes back and forth. I'll do different things now, depending on the project. I'll get advice from different people, and I'm looking for really targeted advice. So if I want to know really specifically the answer to X question,
And so I'll ask a person who I think could give me the answer to that question. Like, I'm getting specific targeted feedback. I'm not really looking for general feedback. So you may be at a different stage. I mean, I'm a person who's done a lot of editing, and I have kind of my own editing system. I kind of have a bit of a self-editing system that I developed over the years. And it's pretty good. Like, I've kind of gotten to the point where I don't really need another editor to come in and give me feedback. Now, I still go get that feedback from other editors. But I'm usually looking for really targeted things. Like, I want them to kind of answer questions that are on my mind, or I want them to kind of give me a different way of looking at things. So either I'm paying for that, or I have a friend who I'm kind of trading work for that. Or, you know, I'll sell the book to a publisher and they'll have an editor come in and they'll pay an editor to do that for me. You know what I mean? Like, I had that with Lightning of Possible Storms. When I sold that book to the publisher, they brought me in an editor, and that editor had, you know, incredible feedback. But, you know, at that point, like, I'm really getting the feedback from professionals in a more professional capacity. It's less like, you know, what's my buddy think? But when you don't have the money spent on it, and you don't have a contract in place, and and someone else spending money on your behalf, get some friends together, get some peer feedback. Just get in the habit of getting the feedback. You know, the thing about getting second opinions is it doesn't really matter. You know, it sounds weird to say it this way, and I don't mean to denigrate people giving me second opinions, but in some ways what their opinion isn't so important. The important thing about getting a second opinion isn't even the second opinion. The important thing is that you're subjecting yourself to getting a second opinion. You need to really practice getting a second opinion. You need to understand, like, you need to practice someone giving you their opinion and you not reacting to it. You know, you need to practice not reacting to their opinion, good or bad. If they're praising you or if they're ripping you apart, you need to learn not to react to their opinion and just sort of listen to their opinion. And you need to learn to how to assess their opinion. Their opinion is in many ways not as important as learning to think about their opinion and think about, what do you agree with? What do you not agree with? Why are they saying that thing? Usually the second opinion is not useful in the sense that they're missing something that you know, and you're kind of, but there's a reason they're missing that. There's a reason they're not really giving you opinion that, like, sometimes when they say they don't like something, instead of getting upset, like, oh, well, I really thought that was great. Instead of getting upset, think, well, why don't they like that? You know, I thought it was so great. I thought that was the best part of the book. So why don't they like it? Is it just that we have different tastes, or is it that I didn't communicate something properly in the draft? Is it a pacing issue? If I paced it differently, would it have hit them the way I wanted it to hit them? I'm very much about that as a writer. I'm very much about trying to engineer their reaction. And so if I hear they don't have the reaction that I want them to have, I want to dig into, like, why I think that's not happening. I don't care so much about their reaction. I want them to have, like, the reactions I want them to have. I don't care so much what reactions they're having outside of that. You know, if they don't like something, it's like, well, whatever. That's not important to me. It's more about, like, did they get it? Did they feel like, sometimes people are mad because you made them sad. And sometimes, like, I want to make them sad though, right? Sometimes people get mad at my writing because they think it's going one way and then it goes in this other direction. But that's what I want them to do. I want them to be mad at me, you know? So I don't care so much about whether they like it or not. Sometimes I want them to not like it. And sometimes their opinions are great, and sometimes they have great advice. I find, again, if I'm asking really targeted questions, like if I just want to know, like, is this confusing? Or if I want to, like, you know, sometimes I'm getting a really targeted answer to a targeted question. In those scenarios, I find it's best just to ask one person and just get, like, their answer. Like, ask the person whose answer I care the most about, and just get their answer. And then that's it. I agree with them or I don't agree with them. You know what I mean? I take their advice or I don't. I don't tend to, if I'm in a targeted thing like that, I don't need a lot of people's opinions because it doesn't matter to me. I just want the answer to my question. Is this funny? Yeah? Great. You know what I mean? Now, if I am just trying to engineer a reaction, or if I'm just kind of, I don't really know how to, if this thing's any good, or if I just kind of not sure where to go with it in a second revision or something, then I'll get just a bunch of people's reactions. And again, I'm not trying to invest in their reactions so much. I'm just trying to practice getting reactions and practice not reacting to their reactions, and then just practice thinking through their reactions. So in some ways, the answer to your question, Casey, your question is where do you go to get a second opinion or to have someone advise or edit it? It really doesn't matter. Any opinion is a fine second opinion, as long as you're not invested in the opinion. So one, you need to practice getting opinions on your work, getting feedback. You need that feedback loop. You need to subject yourself to getting feedback. You just need to practice subjecting yourself to getting feedback. But what the feedback is, in some respects, isn't important. It is and it isn't. You know, so it's important to get that feedback, but the feedback itself is almost not as important as you just practicing getting it. And then also thinking about it rather than reacting to it. And really just, you need to just kind of get that in that feedback loop so that you can kind of build that skill. I mean, really the important part of that whole process is your development of the skill of understanding why you're getting the feedback. You know, why are they saying that? You know, so until you just get a bunch of feedback and you start to sort that out for yourself, it doesn't really matter. Like, you know, it's great to get, you know, the feedback of some big shot professional, but it doesn't matter that much, honestly. Like, at a certain point, it's going to come down to their taste, and their taste is irrelevant. What you need to do is kind of get used to what they're saying, you know. So it's a blessing and a curse. Like when Scott Snyder was telling me how much he loves She-Wolf, I was like, you know, one of my childhood heroes, Scott Snyder, saying he loves my comic. Great. That's cool, but it doesn't really matter to me, like on a certain level. Like I've trained myself into, almost the bad side of this is I've trained myself to like not really invest emotionally in somebody's opinion in my work. So even when my hero is saying they like my work, it's like, well, that's cool. But I don't feel like as emotionally invested positively in it. Like I don't feel as happy as I would have expected to feel about that. Just because I've kind of hit that point of, you know, you kind of hit that point of professionalism, and there's good and there's bad things that come along with it, you know. So the good side of it is if he said he hated it, it wouldn't have mattered so much to me. But, you know, even him saying he liked it a lot doesn't matter as much to me in some ways. Like it does. Don't, you know, if Scott Snyder's listening, I really like do appreciate that. But you understand what I'm saying, Scott. You get it, right? You get to that point at a certain where it's like positive or negative. You just have trained yourself to not emotionally invest in people's reactions. Now, Casey, that is, does also just flow out of finishing it. You got to finish stuff. You got to pick a thing and finish it. It almost doesn't matter what it is, because the most important thing is finishing. You got to get a second opinion just to get a second opinion. It doesn't really matter who it is. Like, it's great if it's a writer. It's great if it's somebody who, you know, knows a lot about the field, but it almost doesn't really matter. Like, you can pull a person off the street and get their opinion. And it's almost as useful to you, because what you're learning fundamentally, what's most useful to you, is subjecting yourself to getting a second opinion. Now, the last question is the biggest question, but it's the one I'm almost going to spend the least amount of time on, because it is a question that I think has a simpler answer than it seems. So here's the third part, the third sort of chain of questions. Once it's really ready, after all revisions, edits, etc., what's the next step? Trying to reach out to different publishing companies, or if it's for TV and film, reaching out to different production companies? And where do you start? somewhere locally, or should we try to get it out somewhere larger, nationally or internationally, even if it's only the states? There's some other questions that follow this, but just for starters, once it's ready, you know, what's the next step? Do you reach out to different production companies or publishing companies or what? So if you think back to your initial beginning, there's sort of the process or the workflow here, Casey, is let's say I got a list of 10 things. Okay, imagine I've got 10 projects that I'm some ways into these 10 projects. So the first thing I want to do, I'm just going to break it all down to like, this is the system, okay? Let's say you got 10 projects. You're trying to just decide what to work on first. So the first thing you need to do, Casey, is you need to look at those 10 projects that are in front of you and think to yourself, are there any of these I can just eliminate and never finish? Like just throw them out, never do them. That's step one. What is on this list that is expendable? Where I just don't care enough, or what? I just, you know, it just is too big a project, or it's too small a project, like it's not really gonna make an impact on my career. Or I just don't feel like it, man. Like I thought it was a cool idea back when I was 7 and now I'm 17 and I don't think it's cool or whatever. You know, you're not 17, but that's the drift of it, right? Now, so first step one, can I eliminate the projects and just never do them? It's great if you can just get rid of a project and decide to never do it. That's sounds like a bad idea when you're starting out, but it's actually a very good idea. Now, let's say I can whittle that project list down to 7. Okay, now I've got 7 projects, not 10. I've thought, you know, these 3, really, they're not that big, that great. So now I'm down to 7 really great things. 7 things I would spend, you know, a year of my life on. You know, each one, that's the next 7 years, maybe. No, maybe not in reality, but like imaginatively. There's 3 things I got rid of, 7 things left. Well, I'm just going to do the thing that's the closest to being done. Maybe that's a project called, you know, bottle water pop. You know, I just looked at random objects in the room. Bottle water pop, that's what I'm going to work on. Bottle water pop is 40% done. It's more than anything else. I'm going to work on it. Okay, now I'm doing bottle water pop. I finish it. Meanwhile, I'm noting in my notebook all the other great ideas that I have for all sorts. My little project list grew from 6 other projects to 16 while I was working on bottle water pop. But that's a fine. I've still stuck to it. I finished it. Well, now I'm going to throw it at the wall. I'm going to see what sticks. You know, go get some information. I got a writer's group maybe. I've already set up a writer's group perhaps, and I've been showing them like pages of it as I write. Or possibly I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to get feedback while I was writing because I found that was counterproductive maybe. It just wasn't helping me like I thought it would. Maybe I got writer's group, but I've just been going to it and not sharing. Well, now it's my turn to share. Or maybe, you know, I don't have a writer's group. I'm just going to, you know, contact some friends. Like, hey, you know, I got friends who like, you know, who are interested in writing. Maybe I took a class, you know, and I met people who were interested in writing in that class, even if I don't know them well. Maybe I just, you know, go to a group. Maybe I just look around for groups to join. Maybe I go join, you know, some campus group. Maybe I start my own group, put up a poster. Who wants to be in a writing group? You know what I mean? Just get the second opinions. It doesn't matter who they're from. Get the second opinions. Now, you get through that. You revise based on, you know, your assessment of how to revise because of what feedback you're getting. So not necessarily doing what they say, but listening to what they say and then thinking yourself, okay, should I make changes on the basis of that feedback? Now we've gotten to this part where we're done. And let's make it real specific. Let's say it is a manuscript for a novel that I've written, okay? We'll do 2 examples, a novel or a screenplay for a feature film. So let's say I've written a novel version of Bottle Water Pop. So the next thing to do here, if I haven't already done this, now you could have been doing this all along, but maybe you haven't done it. Well, the next thing you've got to do is start looking. Now what I should have done at an earlier stage here, let me just back it up for a second actually, because what I should have done at the earliest stage when I picked bottled water pop, because it was as close as being done, again, remember there's an earlier point where I decided not to eliminate it from my list, okay? At that point, I should have really been asking myself, why do I want to do this project? And your why do I want to do this project? On one hand, could be your artistic reason. You know, I really am, you know, invested emotionally or artistically or intellectually in this project. But also, you should just be thinking a little bit about, like, what are your goals for the project? Like, do I want, like, why am I writing this novel? Outside of just wanting to write it, why am I writing it? Do I think, do I want to just, you know, get my novel out into the world? Or do I want to get an agent? Do I want to get it published? Do I want to make money from this novel? Or do I want to make my name with this novel? Now that I'm done the novel, I need to think back on some of those early reasons I was doing it. The reason, it's nice to become clear on those reasons, like some of your goals early on. So let's say your goal is you want to, you know, make a name for yourself with this novel, okay? If you want to make a name for yourself with this novel, if the money doesn't matter so much to you, but you just want like some recognition from the industry and you want to establish yourself as a professional author, and you don't care as much about how much money you make, let's say, like maybe you want to make some money, but you don't, that's not your driving force, okay? If that's the case, if you're really clear on what your goal is here professionally, as well as artistically, so you should have an artistic goal, like, you know, I really want to write a novel that just captures the feeling of how it was, what it was like when my parents divorced. You know, it just was a traumatizing time for me. It was really hard, but, you know, I got through it, and I know there's other people in that scenario, and they're trying to get through it, you know, and I want to write a novel that's going to help those people. Like, if, so that's maybe your artistic goal. But you also might have in your mind, you know, but also, like, just be real. I want to not just do that. You know, I don't just have these noble artistic goals. I also want to make a name for myself as an author. You know, I want to be a real writer. And to me, that means getting a contract from a publisher. Let's say that's your scenario, okay? So whether that's good or bad, I'm just saying, imagine that's your goal, okay? When it's hard to finish, when you're stuck, or when you're just feeling like you're not feeling that draft, you need to force yourself through it. And you need to go back to, like, I would really write those motivations down on a piece of paper and just go back to it, write it on a cue card. And, like, you know, if you're having a tough day, pick up the cue card and just read it. It's like, you know, remember, Casey, you're writing this novel because you've, remember when your parents were divorced and someone else is going through this time. You know, like, literally just go back to, like, why you're doing it. This is going to help you get a contract. This is going to help you get an agent. This is going to help you make, you know, your name on some level. You know, maybe it won't do all those things, but, like, this is why you're doing it on some level. You know, you want people, you want to connect with readers in this way. You need to have that motivation clear in your head to get you through the writing process. And again, I really recommend people just literally write it down on a piece of paper. I know you're just going to feel stupid, but write down, like, why are you writing this? Why does it matter to you? Both, you know, the artistic reasons, the intellectual reasons, the emotional reasons, and just the simple, you know, practical reasons. You know, I want to get a book publishing contract. I want a publisher to sign off on me being a published author, you know, etc. So imagine you did that. Now that you're looking around for, like, who's going to publish this thing, you got to look back at that list of why you wrote it. If you want money, you might want to look into self-publishing. You might want to look at getting an agent that represents genre authors. You might want to look at, you know, go the agent route if you're going to approach big publishers, or you might want to self-publish. If it's more about making a name for yourself and getting the credit, and it's not so much about the money for you, again, you may want to go the agent route, but you might want to go direct to publishers. You know, find some indie publishers, find some, you know, agents. If it's just about the if you don't really care so much about the career thing, you just want to get it out there to the people who are going to, it's going to matter to, again, you might just want to self-publish that. You might just want to put it up for free on a website. You might want to give it away. You know, there's different things you might want to do. You need to think about what your goals are, and you need to let everything be dictated by your goals. Everything should be dictated by your goals. I'll publish different projects in different ways because those projects are fulfilling different purposes for me. So like She-Wolf, I put on Kickstarter. iCollector, licensed to heavy metal. I've taken my poetry to indie publishers, Canadian indies like Book Hug and Coach House. I'll do different things. I've worked with, any number of publishers and production companies in different ways because I've got really precise goals and I'm not going to bother doing things. Like, I've never really gotten an agent because I don't need an agent for what I want to do. Now I'm looking at some other projects that are coming up down the pipe here and I'm thinking, well, maybe for that project I want to go to an agent. I've even got some agents in mind. So, but you know, I haven't really approached an agent at this point because I don't need an agent for what I'm doing. But, you know, I can see on my project list the things where I might want to go agent route. I think the project should dictate where you go. So, yes, you should reach out to different publishing companies in some cases. Yes, you should reach out to TV and film companies in some cases. Yes, you should reach out to agents in some cases. Yes, you should go locally in some cases. Yes, you should go internationally in some cases. I mean, what's your goal? You really have to be clear on what you're trying to do with this thing. You've got to be clear on the realities of the marketplace, too, you know. Is it in a particular genre? Is that genre one that an agent wants to represent, etc.? But realistically, the most important thing here is to just be clear on the goal, be clear on what you're trying to do, and just let that dictate what you do and why. Broadly speaking, all other things being equal, if you really are having a hard time with this, it doesn't hurt to approach an agent because the agent can resolve some of those issues for you. But I don't often recommend people go to agents simply because usually I find people's goals don't require agents. I think I don't want to disparage agents because I do think they're important and I do think there are great agents. But a lot of the times people have this default idea that they need to self-publish, or they have the default idea that they go to agents, or they have the default idea that they go to indie publishers. Whatever default ideas in your head, you need to get away from that. You need to think about what you're trying to accomplish and what's the purpose of it. A large publisher is not going to market you. An indie publisher is not going to market you. You'll make more money with a small press than a large press usually. But you can make more money self-publishing sometimes. But now you're a publisher. Now you're spending all your time publishing. Now you're the one marketing yourself. You're kind of getting into scenarios of like, who do you want to be? What's your career goal? That sort of answers these questions. Do you go local or national or international? I don't know. What do you want to do? It's a big question and you have to answer the question and then you need to do your research. I like, broadly speaking, my bias is do things yourself, partner with indies, avoid middlemen, start local. That's sort of my bias, but I will tell you right now, I did not hesitate to take iCollector to heavy metal and not shop it around locally for the simple reason that the audience I wanted that book to get to had nothing to do with the local scene. I also have got to say part of my bias too is like I want my publishers to be in Toronto so that I don't have to live in Toronto. I want my genre publishers like heavy metal and some of my film connected work. I want those, you know, I would partner with people in LA so that I don't have to live in LA as much. I love working with local companies. I usually work with local companies, but I also work with, you know, international companies. You know, I'm working with a lot of different people in a lot of different places. It's more possible now than it used to be. But you know, if you want to write movies for Hollywood, you got to move to LA and get an agent. If you're not as interested, if you want to work for TV as a TV staff writer, again, you should move to LA or Vancouver or Toronto. If you want to be an indie darling, which is sort of my thing, I'm more like an indie guy, I'm more a cult author. Well, I like to be in Winnipeg because it's cheap to live in Winnipeg. I don't need to make a ton of money living in Winnipeg. So I can pick and choose. I can work with local companies. I don't have to get so much money. I don't need to... I can be pickier because I don't have to pay $5,000 in rent. You know what I mean? Whereas, you know, maybe for you it's better off to go somewhere else or get an agent somewhere else or be a bit more invested in trying to get on a staff or what have you. It starts getting your goal, like I say. If you've written a movie script, are you trying to get employed as a staff writer, or are you trying to get funding for the movie script to shoot yourself, or are you trying to hook up with a director and make it on an indie budget, or are you trying to sell it to a Hollywood company? If you're trying to get the movie made, if your real goal is like, you know what, I don't care if I make money, I don't care if I lose money, or I just, maybe you don't want to lose money, but if you're like, you know, I just want this thing made. If that's where you're at, then send it to indie companies. Find a director, an indie director. Send it to him. Send it to her. Find a actor, you know, that maybe send it to their production company. You know, get talent connected. Don't try to sell it as much as try to get talent hooked into it. You know what I mean? If you want it to be a big Hollywood blockbuster, well, you better get an agent. Whereas you don't necessarily need an agent to get it into the hands of an actor or a production company. You need to get their agent, right? You know, send it to their agent. If you just want to get it made, send it to get yourself an agent if you want it to sell. You need some money, you know, and you're ready for them to ruin it. You know what I mean? You need to think through, like, what's that script doing for you? Is that script getting you a job? Are you going to send it to TV producers and try to get on staff? Or are you going to send it to an agent and say, hey, you know, the script may never get made, but get me a job at a TV station or a TV production company and get me a job with a show? You know, is it your sample script that you're sending around as a sample? Are you trying to sell it? In which case you might be an agent. Or are you trying to get it made? In which case you got to hook up with a director. You got to hook up with a producer. You need to get into production company hands. You know, possibly they would buy it, but maybe you want a partner and not to sell the thing, potentially. So again, locally is maybe a good place to start, depending on your goals. Somewhere larger, nationally, internationally, is maybe a good place to go, depending on your goals. But in that later scenario, you might, if you're not already in LA, you might need an agent in LA, for example. I think other people are overrated in a certain sense. Like what I've found with publishing, for example, is that any time that I have hit a wall in publishing where it says something like, we only take submissions from agents. We only want solicited submissions. No unsolicited submissions. We only want agented, solicited submissions. Anytime I've seen that, I've just contacted people and said, hey, I know your guidelines say you don't want unsolicited submissions, so I'm not sending you this book, but I'd like to send it to you. So would you mind if I send it to you? In other words, would you solicit it? And they write back to me and go, yeah, that sounds great. Absolutely, send it on by. And then I do. So I found without an agent that no doors have been closed to me. But it could just be that I have, you know, really specific places that I'm trying to get into. You know, maybe like if I was trying to get into a different place, I would have the door slammed in my face. You have another question here, which is, how do you negotiate a deal and know what's a good, fair deal for both parties? Do you need an agent involved, or do you need to get an agent involved before talking to publishing or production companies and or lawyers? Well, this is a bit of a more technical question, but I'll give you a brief answer to the question. And now the brief answer to the question is that any deal you are offered will not be a fair deal. So think about it this way. If they are offering you a deal, by its nature, it is not a fair deal. By its nature, it is not a good deal. So it is sometimes helpful to get a lawyer involved. I find that lawyers are, their use is overstated. It is sometimes helpful to get an agent involved. Again, I find that sometimes their use is overstated. Broadly speaking, this is the one reason I've really seriously been considering an agent lately, even though I don't need one. I mean, this project's coming up where I'll maybe need one. And at that point, I'll get an agent, 100%. But I've been thinking about getting one early, perhaps, simply so that I don't have to talk to publishers about these deals. I can just have the agent do it. To me, that's worth 10%, potentially, you know, just them doing it. And then I don't have to deal with the back and forth. Not that it's a lot of time per se, but it's a lot of possible damage to the relationship. So I kind of like the idea of an agent or a lawyer once the negotiation side comes in. But I gotta admit that I have not really needed one, and I've had some successful negotiations. So like my contract with Heavy Metal is a very good contract, because when they sent us a contract, we wrote back to them and said, hey, let's just change these things in the contract. And they said yes. So normally you don't have as easy a time with it, and you might, you know, be in a better off having an agent or a lawyer involved. I was surprised by how easy my Heavy Metal negotiation went. You know, it's really ended up being a contract that I can't believe they signed. But you know, I guess they just were good people. Whereas, you know, even good people, my book hug contract also is a very excellent contract. I was surprised how good that contract was when it came to me, but there's still things, you know, in all the contracts I've signed where I might have, you know, thought another, I might have thought about it a little bit more in retrospect. So the answer on one level is no, you don't need an agent involved or a lawyer involved before you're talking to people. I would say, you know, it doesn't hurt. It's often very useful and good to have an agent or a lawyer involved. But keep in mind, like, you could just be paying a lawyer, like, simply to do that in a contract. You know, a nice thing about an agent versus a lawyer is agents work. They don't take money from you up front. But of course, they cost you more in the long run if you have a success, which is the goal. Yeah, you're not paying them up front, but you're paying them over time. The lawyer you pay once and the lawyer is done. So generally speaking, I recommend lawyers over agents. I find lawyers, but the real juice of it is you need to educate yourself on how contracts work. You need to understand what the clauses mean. You know, you need to know what you should sign and shouldn't sign. And again, you need to have a clear goal. You need to really, writers, broadly speaking, farm out too many things. You know, writers want an agent to handle the contract. They want an accountant to collect their money. They want, you know, someone to do this. They want someone to do that. That's fine. But you still need to know it. Like, you need to know, like, what that lawyer is telling you. It's not enough to, it's not enough to just get somebody else to do it for you. You know, they're not the ones who are going to suffer if they screw up. You know, if the agent signs all your rights away, they still get paid whether they sign the rights away or don't. Yes, you know, maybe you could keep more rights if you got the agent on your side. But realistically, like, what's going to make the difference is whether you know what rights you're giving up. So I would say on a certain level, the answer to all these back nine questions, the answer to all the questions about production companies, publishers, agents, lawyers, the answer on one level to everything is you need to know what you want. And then you need to just figure out, well, who's going to get me what I want? Is a publisher going to give me what I want? Is a production company going to give me what I want? If I send it just straight to actors, will that get me closer to what I want? If I just pay an hourly rate to a lawyer rather than paying 10% forever to an agent, is that going to get me what I want? If I give 10% to the agent, is that going to give me what I want? If I get both an agent and a lawyer involved to deal with this publisher, is that going to give me what I want? You need to know what you want. And even on the simple level, like, let's say you got an agent. You got to be able to tell that agent what you want. That agent works for you. The lawyer works for you. They can advise you. You can ask their advice. They can tell you what they think. They maybe know more than you. But they don't know what you want. That's the thing that people forget about agents and lawyers and other publishing professionals. They probably know more than you about publishing. The lawyer knows more than you about lawyering. The agent knows more than you about agenting. They know better than you about business, but they don't know what you want. And at the end of the day, if you don't know what you want and you don't tell them what you want, you won't get what you want. And I see writers all the time on social media complaining about their agent, complaining about their publisher, complaining about their lawyer, complaining about, you know, this editor. But what they don't realize is they're getting exactly what they said they wanted. People complain all about time about their contracts and about their publishers. I see, you know, people complaining. I saw this thing the other day. I won't say who it was, but they're complaining about, oh, my publisher didn't market the book. They only sold 2 copies in the whole year. It's like, why did you think they were going to market the book? What publisher markets a book? I've never heard of a publisher marketing a book in the last decade, unless it was already a success. Like, where are these magical publishers that market books? They're certainly not the large publishers. You might get an indie publisher. My publisher Coach markets my books. If I was with Penguin Random, do you think they'd market my book? No. Not. They'd have the budget to market the book, but they wouldn't. Not unless it was already a hit. Coach House and Book Hug, I bet, spend more money than Penguin Random House would on me. Now, I don't know because I'm not with Penguin, but I know a lot of people who are with Penguin. I'm not saying they suck. Some of the people I know, they've been really good to. But you really clearly get into this situation. You get in this scenario, allegedly, I'll just say all these things allegedly. You get into this scenario very quick, where if you don't know what the contract says, if you don't know what you want to ask for in the contract, there's just no point coming back and complaining about it later. You signed that contract. So it doesn't matter what the agent said, it doesn't matter what the lawyer said, it doesn't matter what the publisher said. The rules of the game are, if they're offering you a contract, the contract is tilted towards them. And that maybe is fine. Maybe that gets you what you want. You know, maybe them getting all the money gets you what you want. You know, it could be the case. Maybe you want the cred, you want the exposure. Scott Snyder, just to bring him up again, he talks a lot about, publicly he's talked about this, about how the American Vampire contract is one that, you know, was really tilted towards the publisher. And, you know, it's a public contract he certainly wouldn't have signed today, perhaps, but at the time it made sense for him to sign it. And he's grateful that he signed it. And, you know, he later on kind of ended up renegotiating that stuff because they were good to him. But it could have gone a different way. They could have not been good to him. And it would have been well within their rights to not be good to him. And it would have been his fault because he signed the contract. Now, it worked out for him, and he points out that even if, you know, they had wanted to be jerks to him, that would have been fine. It still would have gotten him what he wanted, which at the time was the credit and, you know, the exposure and kind of making a name. They helped make his name, and so, you know, he gave up certain things to make those name, that name. Now that he's got a name, he's not looking to give those things up anymore. So it's a different scenario. You know, you're at different stages of your career. You need to be clear on what you want. You sign different contracts at different stages to get what you want. But if you're very clear on why you're doing it and what you're doing and why, then on some level, it's kind of an irrelevant question whether you have the lawyer or the agent or the publisher or the production company. Is it big? Is it small? Are they LA? Are they local? What do you want? So I hope, Casey, that this has been helpful to you. I wish there were easy one-size-fits-all answers to these questions, but there aren't. And so you really have to begin with what you want and why you're doing it. And let that carry you through finishing things. Let that carry you through picking something, starting it, finishing what you start, before moving on to the next thing, unless you get a deadline or money. And then by the time you're at the point when you're finished and you're ready to take it out and run it around to people and see what other people are interested in, again, where you're sending it, who you're sending it to, the strategy you use to put the thing into the world is going to be dictated by what you need, what you want, who could help you, who you have access to, you know, and so on. But it all should start with just that germ of, you know, being really clear on why you're doing this, what you're doing. Let that carry you through, and let that be the filter for all of your latest decisions. This has been Jonathan Ball talking about writing the wrong way. I hope this has been useful to everyone, and I hope you keep writing the wrong way.